You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Hello, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, May 6th, episode 3944, brought to you today by Chewy. Good morning, horse people.
Well, we have a lot of fun stuff planned for you today. We're going to hear about the 85th running of the Iroquois Steeplechase. I don't think we've talked about a steeplechase in about 12 years. So
it's been a minute.
And we're going to take a look at the history and the work of the Equus Foundation. Plus, this day in equine history takes us on a wild goose chase. And we have some mighty weird news. In the Auditor Post Show, I asked a question in the auditor room today, and I'm so excited to read the answers. I haven't yet. If you had to be trapped in a TV show for a year, which one would it be? So you have to think about your answer too. Hey, guess what? It's the first day of filming for Lisa's movie. They're in Kentucky. They're filming on the first day for the Cat Enright movie. And she posted yesterday, and she's been texting Jamie and I all along here. She's so excited. She posted yesterday that they have 70 people working on this film.
Wow.
This is a serious thing here. It really is. And then talk about two worlds colliding. When I had the acting company, we had a neighbor. She was 16 years old then, and she wanted to be a performer, an actor. And so we drug her along to our medieval feasts, and she played a wench. We drug her along to our medieval feasts. Her parents were kind enough to let her go and get home at 3 in the morning after these things. And she had a blast. She was so much fun. And we've stayed friends ever since. She's the one I've also talked about over the years that lives in Kentucky and had 10 children. Yes, you heard that correct. Well, after a lot of the kids, most of the kids are out of the house now, she went back to school and got her master's degree just now in filmmaking. Because she was always, she was the photographer that took our pictures during the roadshow in Kentucky, you and I.
Okay.
So you met her. And last night, they had their big dinner for the movie getting started and everything. And I get a picture of her and Lisa together. Guess who's working on the movie? My friend Carrie.
That is so cool. She like decides after having and raising all these babies, she's going to go back to school and then gets a job working on a film. Because, I mean, how many opportunities are there to work on films in Kentucky?
Well, actually, you'd be surprised. Apparently, Kentucky is becoming the new place to film movies because of tax incentives. So there's a lot of movies going into Kentucky. They're moving out of Atlanta right now, and they're moving to the middle of the country.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's just so funny how worlds collide sometimes. So I'm looking forward to seeing both of them next
week. Go ahead. Tell everybody else what Lisa did.
She's so excited. She just wanted you to see this, and she couldn't help to tell me ahead of time, and I kept my mouth shut for once. So there's a dog in the books, in the Cat Enright books. There's a dog in there, and it's not this particular breed of dog, but they couldn't find that breed of dog that it would actually cooperate and be good. So what did they end up with, Jamie?
Well, let me just start by saying I did speak to Lisa about this after she posted it. And I was like, I actually met that dog at
you
the
did?
Kentucky 3 Day. Yes, it was in a booth because they have like horse supplements or dog supplements or something.
Yes, that's right.
So this dog was at the Kentucky 3 Day and I saw it because it looks just like Homer.
It does look just it could be your brother, I guess a sister.
Bassett. Yeah. And so then Lisa's like, oh my God, look at this dog we got. And it just kind of pissed me off.
That they didn't ask Homer?
I'm like, literally, I have that dog. And you wouldn't keep this in the family?
Yours is a little books. Under the weather, though. I mean, to be
mine
honest.
Mine is per, and he knows like 8 tricks, okay? Like, he's super smart.
So Fred, the female roadhound, got it instead. So apparently this dog has quite a cult following. I didn't realize.
I know. Fred is a female basset hound, and she is very sweet and very well-behaved, but very not Homer. So Lisa, if you're listening, when I reach out to you, I know you're excited to show me, but I'm kind of butthurt, not going to lie.
Homer could have a girlfriend. This could be Homer's girlfriend.
I sent Lisa a picture, and I'm like, really? You couldn't find this dog?
She was probably cracking up, too. And you've been in the books. Four of the books.
That's what I'm saying. You talk about keep it in the family. This girl that you grew up with is in the movie. How come my dog can't be in the movie? Well, they literally cast my exact dog in the movie, and I'm in the book. Like, come on, Lisa, come on.
I will say, did you see who they cast as Kata Enright? Kata Enright? I got to give them props for that. One, the girl's absolutely stunning. Two, she's a horse girl since birth. Showed a quarter horse, all that stuff. So she is a Southern horse girl, fits the role perfectly. So she's so happy with this casting.
Every single person that they have cast is exactly what I had in my head.
Yes.
When I was reading.
Even Bubba.
Yeah.
Yes. Even Bubba. So she has been doing training of a lot of the cast that don't know how to ride at her farm in Tennessee. So they've been coming down for months now, and she's been teaching them how to ride. So she's now the official. Also, in addition to being assistant director, she's the official animal wrangler on set. We're very excited for her.
Didn't happen to a nicer person. Yeah. She's just the nicest human, so.
All right, let's do some Daily Whinnies.
From the podcast to the barn.
You didn't hit the Daily Whinnies.
I pressed the wrong one. Oh, well, here we go. Sorry about that. Colleen L. and Richard A. By the way, Richard A.'s birthday, he's the one that does the virtual Tevis for us. So happy birthday to both of you. And I am very excited to announce that we have another new auditor this week. That's several we've gotten in 1 week. Sally is a new auditor. Thank you, Sally, for joining the club and for being part of our gang. And if you haven't yet, search for HRN Auditors on Facebook and you can join over there.
And Colleen, sorry, he says your name, Colleen.
It's a Pennsylvania Dutch thing.
Hey, so my new little gray horse, Gray Lux from New Vocations, has a name.
Lux?
No.
Oh.
No, I let Lucas name him. Oh. So as you guys remember, do you remember the pony that Lucas named when he was little?
Oh, there's been 1,000 ponies since then. No.
There's a little black pony, and her name was Precious Magic Gallop Jennings. Yes.
God, that goes back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would like to introduce my new name, my new horse.
Oh, no.
Tito Bandito Dorito Jennings.
Tito, like the alcohol Tito?
No. That's my child thinks highly of me. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of thinking that I could get like some sponsorship from Tito's.
I think
because, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if the horse is a little sassy.
I mean, they were sponsors of the Kentucky 3-Day. Yeah. Like, why couldn't they sponsor my horse named Tito?
And so, go over that again. That's a lot of names.
Okay. Tito Bandito. And Bandito is like his favorite band, 21 Pilots. Oh. That's one of the songs, okay. Bandito. So it's Tito Bandito. And he was like, and it sounds perfect with Dorito, Mama, it rhymes. And I was like, what are you saying here? He's like, Tito Bandito. Actually, he wanted Bandito Tito Dorito, but I was like, that sounds weird. But the other way sounds totally normal.
Yeah, this whole thing sounds normal. So, you whine and make fun of quarter horse names all the time. This is a quarter horse name right here.
Well, he looks like a dang quarter horse. Might as well. Tito Bandito Dorito Jennings, here he comes. So.
Actually, I kind of love it.
It makes me want to drink and eat chips.
It does sound like a name that should be in a country song, doesn't it? It should be a country song. Hey, Kim, get on that with your son. We need a country song with that.
Country song.
Tito Bandito Dorito. We all know that. Donna Brothers exited the Kentucky Derby, was their last ride there. And they did so many cool things that day, highlighting her and giving her a little ceremony and stuff. But there's rumors about who her next replacement's going to be. And I've seen this girl do some news reports. She actually does a whole lot of coverage for FanDuel TV. And her name is Andy Benicone. And she is terrific. And now they're saying, and apparently she was there actually shadowing Donna Brothers during the races. And there are pictures of her riding behind. So she was shadowing her during the races. And Donna Brothers thinks she would be a really good... She's very excited about her. And the reason is she's engaged to Keith Asmussen, the jockey and the trainer. Yeah. And she's also a jockey. She's also a rider. She's in the back of the house for years. So she knows everything going on behind the scenes.
And she's tiny and cute.
Yes, she's tiny and cute. She would be perfect at this. If you go look her up on Facebook, there's a ton of videos with her in it, and she's bubbly and fun. She would be perfect for that job. So it's not confirmed, but apparently Donna Brothers has been pushing for her because she knows she would bring a whole nother flavor to it because she knows everybody. Mm-hmm. From the barns. So I think that would add another flavor to it. Donna didn't know a lot of the people on the backside in the later years. She did it when early on, but, you know, she kind of got out of that a little bit. So there you go. That might be our next one.
Hey, did you see, there's like, they did a piece on Sherry DeVoe, but I don't think they ever aired it. Of course, Sherry DeVoe, the trainer of Golden Tempo, first Kentucky Derby winner female. And it's like this whole kind of like, it's her whole story. You know how they film all these packages mm-hmm. for all the trainers and horses and all this? Well, I don't think they ever aired this one because they said never before seen footage. And it's Sherry with the horses, Sherry and her life, that her whole backstory. And then it's like they had a camera crew follow her for the day. And they're filming her doing the walk over from, you know, when they walk the horses to the paddock down the track, and like all the camera crews are there filming them, watching them walk down. Well, she was being interviewed by Donna Brothers on the walk down. And I literally got to, I mean, so much about this makes me cry. Like, there's just so many stories that make me cry. But Sherry is walking with her and is like, starts almost choking up because she's so honored that Donna Brothers would make her final walk of the Kentucky Derby with her, Sherry that. DeVoe. Oh, I'm so honored that you would spend so like,
she
oh my
so
God.
She was so thrilled to be with Donna Brothers. She was,
yeah, it was so cool. It was that. So cool. Yeah.
Has it been announced? Is the horse running in the Preakness?
They have not announced. Mm. Not last time I saw.
Okay, I'm sure they will if he's healthy. I mean, that's going to all come down to that. But we'll fend off those flies with the help of Chewy. Keep your horse comfortable with feed-through, fly control, fly sprays, and roll-ons, or protective gear like masks, sheets, or boots. If you haven't already, now's the time to set your essentials on auto-ship so you're covered all season long. Chewy has top brands you trust like Simplify, Ultra Shield, Cashel, Shoefly, and many, many more. All in one place. Shop online at chewy.com/equine or in the Chewy app today. For fewer flies and more ride time. For life with horses, there's Chewy. Well, you know, we mentioned this once before on the show, but I wanted to bring it up again because the next guest involves this. Next week, I'm going to be in Lexington, Jennifer and I, and hopefully Jamie will be there and a bunch of others. We're going in for the American Horse Publications Conference and also to see Lisa and go to the movie set. And they also give away something called the Equine Industry Vision Award. They do one a year. It's kind of like a lifetime achievement award in the horse world. And there are four finalists for that this year. I am one of them. Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends, is one. Lynn Coakley, CEO and founder of Equus Foundation. Roxanne Durant, founder and executive director of the Interscholastic Equestrian Association. I have no competition at all here. Like, everybody deserves that.
So wait a second. You're a finalist for the Equine Industry Vision Award behind Michael Blowen from Old Friends, Equus Foundation, the IEA, yes. Interscholastic Equestrian yes. Association, and then there's this guy.
Yeah, yeah. I think my chances of winning are slim to none. But I thought what I would do is reach out to the other nominees and see if we could get them on the show. So the first one is today. Unfortunately, Lynn from the Equus Foundation couldn't make the interview, but Dr. Corinne Bump with the Equus Foundation.
Yeah, that's because you're her competition. She's not giving anything over to you.
We have another one on Friday, too. Unfortunately, right now, Michael Blowen can't do it, so he couldn't do it at this time, and we'll hopefully see him there next week. But Dr. Corinne Bump is up next, and she is with the Equus Foundation to talk about what they do and why they were nominated. So with us today, we have Dr. Corinne Bump from the Equus Foundation. But you were not the one, Lynn was the one nominated, right?
That's right. Yeah, we nominated, the board nominated Lynn.
And Lynn was the founder of the Equus Foundation.
She sure was. She was way ahead of the game in 2002 with founding this. It actually started as Carrots for a Cause.
I remember that. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's a long time ago.
Long time ago. Yeah.
So she is. I'm glad. I don't know if you were involved in her nomination. She just couldn't make this recording today. So I wanted to get somebody on to talk about the Equus Foundation. So thank you for doing that. But tell us a little more about Lynn and why you think she was nominated. And then we'll talk a little bit more about the Equus Foundation.
Sure. Well, I mean, Lynn is a game changer. She is dynamo, and I've only been with the Equus Foundation for a couple months now, but have known Lynn for a long time. And she has done so much with this organization, it's almost hard to comprehend. She started it as a real passion as a horse show mom whose daughter was going off to college, and their valued family member, friend, their horse show horse, where they were looking for a place to retire the horse. And as she started looking around, she, of course, got wind of slaughter. She really hadn't known about that before, horses going to slaughter, and was really concerned about, gosh, how do I ensure that this horse, really doesn't get into that situation, once you retire it? And how would you even begin to know if where you were tying the horse was a really good place? And from that was really born the Equus Foundation. It's kind of remarkable that this horse show mom and a couple other horse show moms that learned of Lynn's cause, were friends, got together and said, we ought to do something about this. And that was how the whole background of the Equus Foundation was started. So it's the only charity in America that's 100% dedicated to protecting America's horses, with the dual mission of promoting the horse-human bond. And that's really what makes it so unique. I mean, the accreditation piece, again, ahead of the game, before TAA, any of the other things. She was really concerned about building an accreditation model that was built on transparency of operations, protecting America's horses, and then sustainability. That if you were going to donate, if you were going to support, that you knew that organization was going to be around. And then at the same time, she realized that, horses and the human, of course, this is Mental Health Awareness Month, right? We know how much horses do for humans. She was really interested in supporting the equine assisted services realm. And she thought, and we know, what a great next home for horses that are being retired to go into these equine assisted services programs, where they get a tremendous amount of attention and love and all those things we want. And then they're helping humans develop in all kinds of wonderful ways.
Did she ever think it would get to, I mean, it's grown. It's a huge organization now.
Yeah.
They do. You have so many different missions. For some reason, the other day, the Rider's Closet came up.
Yeah, absolutely.
We talked about that and, getting apparel out. Just so many different missions. Did she ever think it was going to be this when she started it as a mom?
I surely doubt it. And we had a board meeting not too long ago, and those board members that started this with her, a number of them are still really just so engaged and important on the board. And yeah, who would have thought, right, that at this point over $7 million has gone out to support, this work.
And so you do accreditation of rescues and things like that, correct?
Yep, we have a model that goes through what's called our Equine Welfare Network. Organizations apply to be on that. And then after a year, they can apply. Well, they have to apply every year. I mean, we're really big on every year review everything from how they care about horses to their board structure to their finances, veterinary checks. I mean, It's really incredible, the time and intensity. And we have one mentor program who said we're harder than TAA to get accredited. We took that, you know, really, yes, because while we don't want it to be hard, we want it to be really meaningful, and we want that information to really do what it's supposed to do. So the Equine Welfare Network starts, and then they can apply to be on what's called our Guardian Network, which is a next level above just being on the Equine Welfare Network. And the Guardian really focuses on the organization being highly transparent, you know, so good operational standards, obviously, but really highly transparent. I mean, that's so important, right? If you're going to have a horse that you donate there or that's going to land there, if you're going to give funding, you want to know a lot about that organization and feel really good about it. And then the highest level is a mentor organization. And that is an accreditation that really says highest standards, highest welfare, highest sustainability, and really the kinds of programs that we are looking to raise the best standards practice across the whole industry.
You guys do so much and so much good work. And by the way, thank you. I'm grateful you on all that work you do for accreditation. I grew up, you're going to know this, I grew up and my office, actually I was a financial advisor, my office was in the corner of the parking lot of the New Holland Sales Stables.
Oh my gosh.
So I got to see it every week, you know, all the terrible things that went on there. And my wife and I bought horses from there just because I just couldn't see what was going to happen to them next. But we just had a case here in Ocala of a quote-unquote rescue. It's, 70 mm-hmm. horses? It was a huge situation. I think they got arrested, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a terrible situation. This is so important. It really is.
It is. You know, we hear too many stories about that. And so by not only providing a place that folks can go and find who in their area. I mean, we have 180 organizations across the U.S., so you can go onto the website, you can Google by, or you can search by name, by state, you can see who's near you. But you can also, perhaps even more importantly, is it is an education piece. So you can pull up and see the checklist, the criteria that these organizations are evaluated by, and then you become a more informed person yourself by going, wow, I never thought about that as an important criteria before I donate or have a horse that goes there. So public education is a really important part of that too.
We could take all day talking about all the different things you do. There's one other thing I wanted to mention, because an important part of the American Horse Publications is bringing, you know, aspiring journalists up, and they always bring a couple in every conference that we have every year. And you guys also award equine study scholarships. And from what I read, you're going to be doing over $60,000 this year for scholarships. Yeah. That's amazing.
It is. And so from when you ask about Wood Lynn and those original founders that are, you know, again, so important to us and is still engaged, you know, thought about this, it started where we all find our heart, the horse. But when you think about sustainability of protecting America's horses, that takes a system. And so that means that we need to be going back to the rider's closet. I mean, what an amazing philanthropic venture Georgina started. You know, if those young riders aren't able to access clothing, if there's a barrier, right, to clothing and equipment to ride, that keeps them out. If there's not an ability to find places to study, if they want to go in decline, that can keep them out. So we have the largest database freely searchable of what's called the Equine Education Network on our website. And then we give scholarships as well. So, you know, when you talking about how do we protect America's horses, you've got to have all of these factors, right? You've got to really have a system.
Well, I think it's amazing what you guys do. Please tell Lynn I said congratulations.
I will.
And I guess I'll see you next week.
Yeah, I will. I will. And it's really wonderful that you're pulling together these folks to talk a little bit. And as much as I wish Lynn was on the phone with you today, and I know she would too, you know, she's really busy. We sort of joke that just thinking about her as this Dynamo founder is that if you imagine someone inviting you over to dinner, and the person who invited you to dinner cultivated the soil and found the seed and put the seed in the ground, and it grew it and watered it and tended it and fertilized it, and then harvested it from the ground and then cooked it and then prepared it and put it on the table, and the dish that they served it on, they actually made themselves. I mean, that's really what Lynn has done with this Equus Foundation. From the beginning all the way to her, it's been her over and over and over again. And we're so blessed for everything that she's done.
And I know that all four finalists on that list, because I know them, right? We all know each other. All four finalists on that list have worked a lot of 100-hour weeks to get there. We have worked a lot of 100 weeks. It's not this
game stuff, changers.
These things don't come easy. I mean, she didn't have it easy. Don't. She worked at it.
And that's so inspiring too for young people, you know, that look and they say, well, how does one become a Glenn? You know, how does one become a Roxanne? How does one become a Lynn? And, you know, any of the other folks over all the years that have been nominated and have won. And it's vision, it's dedication, it's persistent, and it's also a lot of grit.
A lot of 100-hour weeks.
Absolutely.
A lot of lost sleep along the way.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Well, Corinne, thanks so much for doing this today. We really appreciate it. I'll see you next week.
Yep, see you there. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by Farnam, an Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control. There's a mouthful. A new fly spray for horses. Discover fly protection redefined with Endure Gold. Made to annihilate flies, ticks, and mosquitoes with brand new EPA-approved ingredients never before seen in equine care. Endure Gold is backed by science and built for hard work, delivering fast knockdown and up to 14 days of fly protection. Add Endure Gold to your arsenal and upgrade your fly control rotation. You know, Jennifer bought some of this a couple days ago, and we've started using it 3 days ago on the horses. She sprayed them once 3 days ago. Normally, we have to spray our horses twice a day. We live in Florida. I don't know what it is about the flies.
We just spray them every 5 minutes.
It's ridiculous. I mean, here we have to do twice a day or we got a problem. And James will run around like a nut if he gets one fly on him. He just doesn't like flies. She sprayed them 3 days ago. She had to respray it for the first time today.
No way.
We're going to let you know how it works. It hasn't rained here, so we don't know what that's like. So I don't know all of that.
To be fair, if it lasted more than an hour,
it did.
Okay, you promise?
It did. I don't know. We've just started using it. I'll give you a more report here coming up.
Is it actual gold in the bottle?
It is. Apparently, it's pure gold. When you spray them, they have the sheen to them.
Oh, good, good, good. So, you know, if it smells anything better than the other mosquito spray that I've gotten, oh my God.
It does have a smell, I will say. It does smell, but apparently it has to be effective is what I'm getting out of these fly sprays that actually work. So, anyway, I'll let you know. But we're using it, and we bought it. It was not sent to us, so
I want to let
you
know.
Guess where she bought it? Give you two guesses. First one doesn't count.
I give you a guess of Chewy.
Yes, correct. That's correct. She buys everything at Chewy.
We keep everything in the family, people.
Yes. All right. Coming up next, we have Dwight with the 85th Iroquois Steeplechase happening in Tennessee, I think, this weekend. So we're going to talk to them. It's been a long time since we talked about a steeplechase. Dwight, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's a very busy week for you because you have a big weekend planned.
We do. We've got the Iroquois Steeplechase this weekend. This is going to be our 85th year, so we're really looking forward to it. I think we're going to have a pretty Saturday. Looks like the weather's going to cooperate with us, so we're excited. We're close by.
And your chairman, where is the steeplechase held?
Steeplechase is held in Percy Warner Park in Nashville, Tennessee.
And, you know, that isn't a place I would normally think about a steeplechase in Nashville, right? I mean, it's just not something I would put two and two together.
Well, we're located in a big park. I think it's about 5,000 acres, Percy Warner Park. was built in the 30s by the WPA, which was a program Roosevelt enacted to bring the country out of the Depression. And we were lucky that some of the sportsmen in Nashville at the time convinced the WPA that it would be great if we could also build a steeplechase course within the park. And so we actually ended up with a wonderful steeplechase course. And so it's been here for 85 years.
I will say this. I've been to steeplechases a number of times. We used to go all the time at Fair Hill in Maryland. And the reason I love steeplechases is it's so much different than going to a regular horse race. One, obviously, we're jumping over hedges and stuff. But beside that, it's a party. The whole thing is a party from the time you get there, and then you watch horses run by, and then you party some more. It's just a fun day out.
It really is. You know, there's something for everybody as opposed to the flat track, which mostly is for adults, whereas we have something for everybody. We even have a family area for the kids where there are bouncy houses and face painting. There's lots of venues where you can get food, drink, and all day long. And then you can tailgate, which you normally don't do except maybe at the Derby and the Preakness, where you can get 10, 12 of your friends, pull into a tailgating spot, and have your own party. So it really is. And then everybody really gets dressed up. We're in the spring, and they wear their finest and their big hat. So it is. It's a great big party. It's a festival. We even have music.
And how many races will you run that day?
This year, we're going to have 7 races. We've got over 700,000 in purses, which ranks us as the largest steeplechase in the spring, and we're the second largest overall.
Wow, that's amazing. And I did see this year, are you having music for the first time?
We are.
That makes sense in Nashville, right? I
mean, you're right. So, yes, we do. We have music venue down in the infield. It's open to everybody, and we'll have 5 or 6 acts playing during the day. So it gives you something to do in between the races.
And that's one of the things I always said about regular tracks is Red Mile in Lexington, Kentucky did a good job of making the races more like a party, right? They always had stuff going on between the races that was fun. And I always said regular tracks need to do that to keep people coming out. And steeplechases do that. The disadvantage, I think, and I don't know how yours is laid out, but you couldn't see a lot of it. So you saw them run by and then you see them run by again. But the way that it was set up on the steeplechases I've been to, you couldn't see the whole track. How's yours laid out?
Well, we're very fortunate. You're absolutely right. Most race meets you can't. I was just last weekend at the Gold Cup in Virginia and you can't see the whole backside. But when the sportsmen that decided it'd be great if we could have a steeplechase course, they found a venue that basically has a big hill and a bowl in front of it. So the whole course, is laid out right in front of you, and you can see 100% of the course. Well, one of the few places that's possible, but you can hear.
And, you know, we were talking the other day after watching the Kentucky Derby and NBC said they had record numbers of 25 million watching. I think some horse sports have definitely gotten more mainstream, especially the fun ones. Have you seen attendance still rising? Are you getting more and more non-horse people out?
I think so. You know, we're at the tail end of the spring steeplechase season, and most everyone, and the season starts in mid-March, and most every steeplechase this spring has had record crowds. As I say, I was just at the Gold Cup last weekend. They had record crowds. Aiken and Camden was at, and they had enormous crowds, I think. And we're looking at a big crowd here. So I think the popularity of the sport, because it's fun, but, you know, as you say, it's a big party. I think it's continuing to grow. So, yes, you know, the popularity seems to be increasing.
And the other thing, too, about steeplechases is the food is always better than at a regular horse show. It's always really good food at steeplechases.
It definitely. I mean, we've got great caterers, so the food is really good. And that's typical of most of the race meets. So, yes, it's not just your fare that you might not want to eat.
Right. So, okay, so let's talk a little about the horses or I'll get in trouble. I am a horse husband at heart. So I think about food first, drink second, and then the races. So let's talk a little bit about it. How many fences do you have on a race?
Well, it depends on the edition. Most of our races are 2.25 miles. And then the feature race, which is a grade one Iroquois, is actually 3 miles. So typically the horses are going to jump 12 fences. In the Iroquois, they're going to jump 15 fences.
That's a lot. 3 miles is a long way, too.
It sure is.
That's an endurance ride right there. So how many horses will be in each race then?
So we're looking at anywhere from 10 horses to 14 horses, depending on the race.
Is there betting on these races? Legally?
Unfortunately, there's not legal betting in Tennessee. I've heard by rumor that there is some betting going on.
I bet, yeah.
Those rascals.
He can now either confirm or deny.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I just want to encourage everybody listening, if you haven't been to one and there's one in your area, get out to see it. It is a whole lot of fun. Go with a group, though. Go with a whole bunch of people. We used to go, too. We lived in Kentucky. We would go to the Kentucky Horse Park, the one there. And that would get 30,000 people for sure. I mean, it was packed there, too. That's a fun one if you live in that area to go to. Dwight, good luck.
You've gotten around.
Yeah. I've seen a bunch of them. You know what? Have a great weekend. We hope you have perfect weather. No storms. None of that crappy weather Tennessee gets. It's going to be beautiful and sunny, and everybody's going to have a great time.
I think it is. Right now, the forecast is good. I don't think it's going to be too hot. So if anybody's listening, come on out. There's still some tickets available, and I think it's going to be a great day.
Do you advise them to buy tickets ahead of time?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. You go online to IroquoisSteeplechase.com, and you can buy them there.
Is it .com or .org or both?
It's both.
Okay, good. All right. Thank you, Dwight. We appreciate you joining us today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
You can enjoy your favorite equine videos all in one place with Ride TV, the ultimate equine streaming platform. The newly relaunched Ride TV has all the series you love, like Mini Horses and Ridiculous Ranches, plus top-tier training videos and event footage from Horse and Rider On Demand and BarrelRacing.com. Live the action, learn from the pros, love the stories. Subscribe to Ride TV today for only $19.99 to see where your ride takes you. Visit RideTVGo.tv to subscribe.
That whole bumper seems much more appropriate this time of year, doesn't it? During Triple Crown season.
I like it.
Today in equine history, in chronological order this time for Jamie's little brain.
God. You mean you're not going to take us from 1972 back to the Byzantine Empire?
No, but I had a tough time today because the first story could have gone at the beginning of the end, so I didn't know what to do with it. You caused me anxiety today, Jamie, because of that.
I'll score you. I'll let you know how you did.
Okay. Well, it's about archaeologists, you know, in modern day, uncovering something from a long time ago. So where do you put that?
Oh, that's a good question. Go ahead.
I'm going to start with it.
I will allow.
Archaeology. And by the way, this was sent in by a listener, so thank you. Archaeologists in central Sweden have unearthed a remarkable and rare collection of Viking Age horse equipment in a burial ground, offering new insights to the cultural significance of horses during the Viking era. When you think about Vikings, you don't think about horses, right? You think about ships and raiding on foot and, you know, all that.
I think about dragons.
Yeah, exactly. Over 500 exceptionally well-preserved iron artifacts, including ornate fittings, spurs, and bits. And I saw pictures of these. These were very ornate. They make our Western bits today look chintzy.
Wow.
They were discovered in graves where horses were cremated alongside their owners. And the only time they did that is when the horse was special. In other words, this was their lifelong horse, who unfortunately had to lose his life because they believed that the horse then, they rode the horse into the afterlife.
No, so, wait, they killed the horse too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, that was a big thing. And they would kill the dogs and cats or anything else that was special too, because you're all going to the afterlife together. That was the idea.
Oh my gosh. But then like, also if I was his wife, I'd be like, can I have that bit?
Yeah. Can I have the horse? I needed to ride around.
Yeah. But if you're going to ride, you have to take everything with you. Can I at least keep the nice stuff?
They used to when the women died, they'd put all their jewelry and stuff in too. That's where grave robbing became so popular.
I'm going to ask for that back.
But what it really does is it shows the bond between the Viking people and their horses, because that's the only reason they did that. Plus, it really showed the skill of the blacksmiths. Consider that this was a long time ago, right? 1,000 years ago, and these blacksmiths were doing this intricate work. And a lot of it now is on display at the Historical Museum in Sweden, if you ever get over that way. Jamie, do you know where the term wild goose chase comes from?
I cannot even imagine. I could, but it would probably be inappropriate.
It's horse related, believe it or not.
I did not know that.
The 16th century, English horse racing, during the 16th century, they played an English horse racing game. In this game, a lead rider would gallop off in a random direction across the countryside, weaving back and forth and everything. And then other riders were forced to trail closely behind, mimicking the pattern of a flock of wild geese. They would go in a V formation, trying to follow the path. Keep in mind, they didn't have TV or internet back then, and there wasn't a lot to do. So
I was going to say, this is a game?
This is a game they played. It was actually written about in Shakespeare's play in 1595. Romeo and Juliet is the first time wild goose chase is mentioned, and it was to describe Romeo's shifting and hard-to-follow wordplay. But that's where the term wild goose chase was first mentioned in writing, and it was because of this game that the British played, because they didn't have TV or internet.
Romeo was hard to follow wordplay,
yes,
but it wasn't Shakespeare.
No, Shakespeare wrote that, yes.
I'm just telling you, all of Shakespeare's hard to follow wordplay, but God love it.
I was in a Shakespeare play once during my Renaissance Fair days. I had, 50 lines. I didn't understand a word I was saying, to be honest. I had no clue what I was saying. I had no clue what it meant. I just knew when I had to get the funny part out, and it had to be right timing to get the laugh. And after a couple shows, you figure that out. But otherwise, I had no idea what that play was about.
Nope.
In 1933, to celebrate the end of Prohibition in the United States, August Bush and Adolphus Bush decided to surprise their father, and they presented him with a magnificent 6-horse hitch of Clydesdales, pulling a red, white, and gold beer wagon outside the brewery in St. Louis. The beautiful draft horses were an immediate sensation. They were promptly sent on a tour to deliver the first legal cases of Budweiser to political figures, including a trip to the White House to deliver a case to President Franklin D. Roosevelt, instantly becoming what they are today and part of the brand. But that's how it all started, was a gift to Papa.
That's cool.
Back in 1933, to celebrate the end of Prohibition, which Anheuser-Busch was very happy about.
Now we can legally transport beer.
Yes, exactly. I didn't know about the president part, that they took him to Washington, D.C. I didn't know about that part. So that's kind of cool. There's my news for the day. Now it's time for the real news of the day.
Time to learn why some days you're embarrassed to be part of the human race in Jamie's Weird News.
I really shuddered to think that you think this is real news.
It's real news. I mean, it is. It's weird.
It's real. I don't make it up, but it's like sometimes you're like, why did somebody write this story? Like this is a huge story, this first one. But let me back up. If you want to participate in this, I need your help. I need you. And so if you are looking through the news and you see something, you're like, that is so weird, email it to me, weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com. Like Michelle, Stephanie C, Stephanie P, Isabel, Laureen, Janelle, and Shelley all did. Thank you guys so much. Now, Glenn, one of the most frustrating things about being a parent, I must say, like one of the most, is freaking taking your kid to school. There is a drop-off craziness that happens and pickup time too. And it's just people lose their minds. And so any sort of delay or traffic, they'll be like, but you can't still get out of the car. Like it's a whole thing. So on Thursday morning, This was at the Cheatham County School District said this on social media because there was a giant mess of a traffic jam at West Cheatham Elementary School early Thursday morning. And they're like, elementary school parents are worse than middle school parents. Like, they're crazy. They're like, these are my, I don't know what happens. But anyway, there was like this huge backup and the Cheatham County School District had to come out and make a social media post about the massive delays. And they were texting parents and everything too, about the massive delays going into school on Thursday morning. Just be ready. Would you like to guess why there was a delay in the drop-off, Glenn?
Does it involve a horse?
No.
Oh.
No. Okay. It involves something my husband is adamantly opposed to, and that is a helicopter. There was a helicopter that, like, crash-landed in the parking lot of the school. Ooh. And nobody could get in. Everybody was fine. Everybody was fine, but just the fact that some part of the helicopter, like, flew off, and they ended up having to make an emergency landing, and they're like, this school parking lot was the biggest and best spot, but it just wreaked havoc, and I can't imagine how frustrating it was for everybody else, even especially the people in the helicopter, but everybody was okay. Nobody was injured. All right. Well, I gotta admit, there was a whole lot going on in Florida this past week. I mean, so many.
Don't we things. Get a week off every once in a while?
No, you do not. But I'm only going to give you one of them because, you know, it was, I was like, they're kind of tedious. Like, okay, yes. The one video that I did see of the police officer chasing the alligator out of the middle of the intersection was admittedly fantastic, but we're going to go with this one. So we are going to go to, what is up with West Palm Beach, Florida? I feel like so many stories.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot goes on in West Palm Beach.
Well, I mean, there's nothing more exciting than what happened at the Taco Bell. Because, I mean, what, that story doesn't start with Taco Bell in Florida at 2 in the morning. Yeah. So there's the employee, and his mugshot looks just like what you would imagine. His name is Damari Jaquan Patterson. Well, he was a Taco Bell employee, and he was behind the counter, and two customers entered the Taco Bell, and it doesn't say the time, but I'm assuming it's probably sometime in the middle of the night. So these people come in and they're like, hey, can I get a cup for water? And Patterson gives them the cup for water, and they walk over to the soda fountain and, like, start filling it up with soda, like, right in front of him. And he's like, hey, and then he begins to what they say. These people provoked a verbal altercation, as you can imagine. And as the verbal argument continued, a third customer just happened to walk into the Taco Bell. The argument escalated, and Patterson just screaming, do something, do something, do something, according to, because everybody's filming it. Everybody has cell phones. So then another employee rushes over and grabs Patterson, like, wrestles him. Am I giving you too many details? No. I can skip over stuff.
I want to hear what happens at the end.
So they wrestle Patterson to the back. They're like, listen, man, sit down. And the employee's like, y'all get out of here. Just get out, get out, get out. And then they hear,
uh-oh.
Uh-huh. Patterson comes out firing at all the people that are, like, stealing soda at the soda fountain. Either that guy is a Taco Bell hero or he's going to jail forever.
Florida could be a hero, let's be honest.
He did so mad he starts shooting. Nobody got shot or anything. So, but he did pistol whip one of them in the face.
Oh,
so
there you go.
He's going to jail.
He got it done, didn't he?
And then he chases all of them out, shooting, and they all get into the car and drive off. Guess who calls the police? Patterson.
He called the police on himself?
No, he's like, these people were stealing soda.
Not going to happen on his watch.
You can't shoot at them because they stole soda.
Well, let's be honest, they did bring soda to a gunfight, so...
There's so many jokes that you can make up with it, but I would like to tell you that Patterson is in jail. Oh. He went to court and they were like, we're going to keep you in here for a while.
So let me clarify that for the sake of my own state. you can't get, you're not supposed to shoot at people for stealing soda. Is that correct? Is that what I get out of that?
I would say, like, you know, case by case. Okay. Really. But, like, for the most part, like, you know what? If you're going to shoot at somebody who's stealing soda from your Taco Bell that you're an employee at, make sure you don't call the police. Like, let them do it.
And we are an open carry state, so this is liable to happen anywhere, to be honest.
Yeah, no, you guys, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here.
Let's remind you, you live in Oklahoma.
I know. That's why I'm not going anywhere. There's all sorts of craziness here, too. So let's go to Armenia, because I want to talk about something.
Okay, that's a first. Armenia.
I know. We've never been to Yerevan, Armenia. That is the nation's capital. I'm sure I'm saying it incorrectly, but there is a really big zoo called the Yerevan Zoo. And unfortunately, police started getting a lot of calls. There was a zebra that had escaped the Armenian zoo and was running loose down. I can't even say the name of the road. And so police are swarming out there. There's all these concerned citizens who are trying to catch the zebra and they can't get close. And finally, they get close enough to the zebra and they're like, "It's okay, folks. Nothing to see here. It's all good. It's not a zebra." Do you want to guess what it was?
A horse? A pony?
It started with a social media influencer who was trying to get clicks and painted his donkey in stripes and took him to the middle of the city and let him loose. And he's the one who called the police. And he's like, "There's a zebra on the loose." And
God. He was
filming the whole thing. "Children, please."
Was he visiting from Florida?
I'm pretty sure he was an Armenian citizen. I don't think he chipped a donkey over, or maybe stolen. I don't know. It could be the same guy from the last story. I don't know.
Oh my God. Did he get arrested, please?
So it says that the citizen whose identity is currently being determined by law enforcement. So they don't have him, I guess, in custody yet. I don't know. It's Armenia. I don't have a direct line to the authorities for follow-up questions. Okay, this one, it's really gross. But I have to tell you this because I just feel like you all should know.
I need a gross bumper, a gross alert warning bumper.
I'm warning you now. This is your alert. This is gross. I am glad. Listen, I've never been a fan of Chinese food. Like, I'll go to a Japanese sushi restaurant. Like, I like going to sushi restaurants and I like going to, you know, those chop it on the table and hibachi places. But I've just never liked Chinese food. And this has really driven that home. Okay. So we're going to go to the China Queen in Pineville, Louisiana. The China Queen in Pineville, Louisiana.
Just a name. I don't trust it.
You can see this place in your mind, I'm sure.
I can. It's like every strip mall Chinese place there is.
Yes, exactly. The China Queen.
There's three tables inside and most people get takeout.
I don't think people are going to be getting takeout anymore. Do you want to maybe know what? Do you want to take?
I really don't
want
to know any of this story, to be honest. You know, we do the restaurant inspections. They post them here in the local website, and I see them come across. And I occasionally look at them, and I don't know why I do, because eventually every restaurant is on it for something, right?
No, not for this.
Okay, this is a new one. All right, I got it. All right. Lay it on me.
Nobody's going here anymore. Okay, so I actually think they didn't really say who called it.
Does it involve a cat or a dog?
And reported it, but they're pretty sure it was an employee of the China Queen who called in, and they were like, "Hi." They called the Pineville police officers and they're like, "We need you to come out and do an inspection in this restaurant because we're pretty sure these things should not be in the restaurant." And that's right. Officers come out and they go to do their inspection and they find what in the freezer? Roadkill.
That's worse than a cat or a dog.
These now innocent till proven guilty, But they had roadkill in their freezer. Okay. Like they were collecting dead things off the road and they had them in their freezer. Now, the China Queen has responded to all of the publicity by placing a note on the front door.
That's how they do it. And what did it say? Does it, you know what it said on the front door?
It says, it just, that's the way that they respond, by putting a note on the door.
Well, we don't have the internet.
And it says, we apologize for the recent incident. The items involved were never intended to be served to customers, but we admit they were improperly stored.
Yeah, no kidding.
It has been full. I'm going to paraphrase here. The freezer's been fully cleaned and sanitized. We're cooperating with health authorities and have corrected our procedures. What procedures?
Are we just bougie that we wouldn't put our roadkill in the freezer with other stuff? Are we just bougie?
We have now stopped. We promise. Collecting dead animals off the road and feeding them to you. I mean, again, innocent until proven guilty. But I don't know how they're going to prove that.
I don't
know
either.
Yeah.
Well, you know, somebody's got to collect the dead animals. Prefer it wasn't my local restaurant, but
Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries and the Louisiana Department of Health have both begun their own investigations within their agencies.
Why does this, you know, if there's one state that's equal to Florida in craziness, it's Louisiana. So
I don't know. The numbers are higher in Florida. We see a lot more.
I just
think
there's less reporters in Louisiana.
That's probably true.
I think there's less of this being reported. What, you know, happens in Louisiana stays there. It's apparently we never had that saying in Florida. Do you have another one or is that it?
No, that's it. That was enough.
I got to end on something better than that because it's going to stick in my head all day. Because I do like Chinese food.
Literally staring at, they have a picture of the restaurant.
Okay, enough.
It is the mini mall that you are seeing.
This was posted by an auditor. The Guinness World Records came out with a new record, and I'm happy to report it's also animal-related, but it's not dead. It's a Gertie. Just got the nomination for being the oldest chicken alive. Gertie's a 15-year-old golden Sebright from Portland, Maine. How long do chickens usually live? 7 years?
The little ones are kind of like dogs, where they live longer, and horses, you know, they live longer, they're smaller. And Sebrights are like, if you put your hand, like football size, like
they're tiny,
smaller, but half a football. Yeah, they're tiny chickens.
Well, apparently, this one recently went blind and lost his sight and was getting bullied by the other chickens because, you know, if there's one injured chicken, they're going to kill the thing because that's how.
I have one chicken that's 7 years old and it's like a battle. I mean, I can't believe it's still alive because they just don't live that long because mine are out free range.
You need to do what Frank Turek did. This is the solution. Okay. Frank Turek saw this poor 15-year-old chicken getting bullied, and he decided that he was going to bring it indoors. So he brought it in the house. Explain that one to Chad. He brought it in the house and made it a little enclosure in the living room, of all places.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen.
And chicken smell. I mean, it smells so bad. And apparently, Gertie remains surprisingly active and healthy. She's developed a strong affinity for jazz music. And Turek plans to celebrate her upcoming 16th birthday with a live saxophone and her favorite treat, cracked corn. So there you go. That's a happier story than yours. I don't know.
I'm just waiting for them to be like, and then we ate her.
Gertie'd be a little tough by now, I think. See you, everybody.
Bye. I'll say hi to Tito Bandito Dorito for you.
Hang on, auditors.